It's time for Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Anthony.
Hello.
Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Bon année.
And me, Brian. And is there any JoJo's news? I can't remember. I'll tell you what JoJo's news I've got. Is I just bought season one for £7.99 on DVD. Only seven left on Amazon.co.uk.
I'm pretty sure I pre-ordered it for more, but I do not regret it.
I heard it was a bit of a slapdash affair.
It's not great. The subtitles are kind of like look super pixely kind of thing, you know the way?
Yeah, but I think it was £7.99.
Yeah, fuck it.
Not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. Well, it's not really a gift if I'm paying £8 for it.
For something you've seen.
Yeah.
You can get on Crunchyroll, can't you?
I could, yes. There you go.
Oh, God, but hey, I've got it
for posterity. If I lose my internet connection, I can still watch JoJo's.
The Y2K happens again, you know, if you're on set.
So, we're back from Christmas and New Year's, which means we've got a lot of anime to talk about, a lot of catching up to do. We have two shows in particular. So let's start with one where we've only got one episode to watch, and we all watched it. And that is One Punch Man episode 12, The Strongest Hero. Anthony, do you want to do the synopsis?
Oh,
you
always want to do the synopsis. I've just been saying that. I will do my best. I will try and,
You know, you were just saying that you couldn't remember what happened.
Yes. I know there's, we're finally at the fight. It's the finale. And
yes.
It's fantastic. We get like a fancy version of the intro song. Well, they're fighting and everything. It's exactly what you could ask for. It's exactly what I needed. But I can't remember what series of events. I can't remember, like, what Metal Bat was doing. That's all I've got in my head.
I'll say what Daisuke says. It says, the inconceivable power. Sorry, the inconceivable I tried to say it. I forgot how to read or speak. The inconceivably powerful Lord Boros has traveled untold distances in search of someone who can cure his boredom. Saitama. With the fate of humanity in the balance, will the two champions at last find in each other the worthy opponent they have been searching for? The answer is one of them will.
Guess.
And it will cost him his life.
For a while it seems like Saitama is really getting into it, and then it just keeps cutting to his face, and he's just like, is that it? Is that all you got?
He's getting smashed from his spaceship now, Boros is firing off attacks now that, are carving furrows in the atmosphere above them.
At several points in the fight, turns into lasers. Mm. Like, he just becomes a point of light dashing around.
I'm sure he powers up as well, so he wasn't strong enough, he powers up! I think he powers up again after that.
Yeah, he does the double power-up that shortens his lifespan.
Yes.
The standard.
All the shonen tropes.
Yeah,
hidden technique.
Shreds affections.
He's basically, you get like a Piccolo and you get like Goku and you mush them together and you get a few other guys in there as well. And yeah, he's all those guys.
Piccolo.
A lot of Vegeta in there as well, of course. But, because he's a dick.
And Saitama has to break out consecutive normal punches and even that's not enough.
And he says it so dryly, it's wonderful.
And so he has to finish him off with serious punch.
Serious attack, serious punch.
And it kills him.
Meanwhile, on the ground, Silver Fang pulls himself out of the wall.
Yeah, he's fine. I love that.
Oh, yes!
Yeah.
It's just a hole. Oh, no, his clothes fell off.
You can see how ripped he is. And there's no way he was that ripped underneath that jumper, from the previous thing.
And, I can't remember the fella's name, the one who used to have lots of heads, but now only has one.
Mel. I just called him Mel, for short.
Yeah. So he was gloating, and then he pulled himself out of the wall, and he was like, yeah, I've worked out how this works.
Yeah, you always generate your head first, idiot.
Yes, so therefore, all we got to do is punch you when you're zoning your head there.
Yeah.
And just snatch it out of the air like Mr. Miyagi.
Tornado's throwing loads. Well, yeah, Tank Top Master tries to get in on the throwing things at the spaceship, but Tornado tells him off.
Well, she starts throwing something that he's currently standing on.
Yes.
Well, like, you know, okay, I'm gonna like fun. The power of the tent top is gonna come through today. So like, no, a sizable like bit of concrete, and lobs it far. And it's like, oh yeah, got a bit of concrete fly, and see what just goes. It's a spaceship. Oh, well, a few more of those, you know, and then like a barrage of them. Like,
we get the scenes of all the lower ranked aliens just panic. They've all moved into the same room together on the spaceship.
I imagine they're all just trying to get to the escape pods or whatever. Yeah, those guys are great. I'd watch a show about them. Just the shitty space goons.
Bad news.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah. Point. Yeah.
So Drive Knight is like, well, this looks like it's all wrapping up here. I'm off. But before I go, Genos, I need to warn you that Metal Knight is not your friend.
Yeah, it's kind of like, dude, are you going to be anything more than obscure? It's like, no, I got to go.
The actor, what's the actor called?
Amai Mask. Handsome
Mask. Yeah,
didn't
he slay all the aliens?
Well, he comes in and gives them all a Balkan. It's like, dude, at least we fucking did something. It's like, yeah, but fucking city's destroyed. Way to go, assholes.
Then he kills the innocents. Yeah. Well, maybe not the innocent aliens.
Well, they were certainly captured.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. And then
I don't think Spotty Alien Man was a threat to anyone.
he's just a guy in charge, like, firing the guns.
Yeah, and he can't even fire. He doesn't even fire them indiscriminately. It's like, have we got the orders from up? Okay, press the button. You know, he's just doing his job, man. He might be from a subjugated planet. We don't even know.
It's funny. They don't know, man.
They're probably fairly shady, but, you know.
He's under duress now. But, like Boros could, like, you know, like, have fun and say, okay, spotty alien, man, you're going to pull the trigger on these guns. Otherwise, little Spotty Timmy is going to lose an ear, okay? Okay, but I'll do whatever you say. Leave my family out of this.
So who's the worst arsehole in this? Him or Metal Knight, who also turns up after the fight's finished to strip mine the alien technology?
I mean, like, I guess your man's more of a dick to get in their frills like that, whereas, yeah, it's kind of just brilliant. Now that you've defeated him, I can have it, you know?
Yeah, well, I think people have said that Metal Knight, he's just out for himself.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Then I'm off. We can't count on him to do anything.
It's difficult to decide who's worse, because neither of them have done any heroing to my viewing. No. You know, they just kind of go like, I'm just here to test my weapons. I'm just here to steal the shit. I'm just here to give everyone else a bollocking and promote my new single.
Yeah. Well, at least Metal Knight is being sincere and honest in his intentions.
About his dickery.
Whereas fucking Sweet Mask is just like, oh, he's kind of, it's all about his reputation and his public face. Like, it's like, that's just so much more underhanded, and you just want to hate him that much more as a result.
Metal Knight's a bit of a badass, though. Whereas the other dude is just frustrating.
To be fair, Saitama and Genos are also a bit of an arse in this episode. When Saitama convinces Genos to be rude to Tornado and gets thrown into the wall for his efforts. The look on Saitama's face when Genos is telling her off is hilarious.
It's such a good episode. Although it's a bit of a blur. When I was watching it, I don't think I've ever been so excited. Maybe the week before, and then it was topped with this.
It was literally a blur, even at 1080. It was like, the stream couldn't keep up with how fast things were moving at some points.
This seems to blow up really good. Really good.
We get a bit with the lower class heroes as well, doing some saving and being great guys.
Oh, yeah.
And the city's destroyed. They rebuild the base.
Bigger than before.
Yes.
It rolls everywhere.
Aliens can't get us with this moat we built around it.
And then, was it Pluton or something?
The King of the Underworld.
King of the Underworld shows up.
Because he defeated Earth, the sea, and the sky. Well, the sky just got defeated. So I guess the Underworld was the only one left.
The Sea King, the ancient dinosaur king.
Oh, the Underground King, actually. There was already an Underground one. Although he wasn't great.
And Saitama's annoyed that he's back to just defeating these people with one punch.
Average,
yeah.
But now he's a guy who's a hero, well, a professional hero, and his disciple.
Yes. A professional hero for fun and profit.
And his sidekick, Genos. the boy cyborg.
We also get a glimpse of Child Emperor's powers. He's got these, like, spider's legs coming out of his backpack.
He's like, what's his face? Gizmo or Team
Dad? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes, he is, yes.
Yeah. I was thinking, is that just, like, the same thing? He just has a techno backpack.
Can we agree that this is the best series of the year? I don't think I've ever discussed it with you lot.
I don't know. The final scene of Concrete Revolutio.
Oh, right. Okay.
Good.
I mean, like, here's the thing, right? In nearly any other year, it probably would be, but it's been a really good year. So,
yeah, I was kind of like, oh, Concrete Revolutio is easy. And then I watched, because I watched Concrete Revolutio before I watched this. And so I was like, oh, it is really hard to choose between them.
Yeah.
You imagine how easy it would be to watch through One Punch Man again.
Oh,
if you had that Blu-ray, that would just sit. It would just, you'd watch it. Yeah. You'd watch it in one fell swoop.
But there were so many things that were out in 2015. There were Star's Crusaders in Egypt. There was Blood Blockade Battlefront. There was Death Parade. There were so many great things.
Exactly. I don't think you really have to. I mean, like, if you want to, you can pick a favorite. But I don't think it's really necessary with all that good shit.
Oh, you've got to. You've got to.
All right, then. I choose JoJo's because that was fucking amazing.
Yeah, from my amount of effort put into appreciating it, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Record stands on that.
Yeah, I mean, like, not to say One Punch Man's any less for it. It was fucking, that was an amazing ending, an amazing series all the way through. Like, it just kept up the pace. I kept figuring it would slack off, like, considerably at some point, but no. I mean, like, I imagine they managed that for just 12 episodes, but still, pretty good.
Right, moving on to Mr. Osomatsu. There was two episodes we missed. There was the year-end special, Sam, episode 12, which was a clip show. Did any of us watch this? It was Osomatsu and Totoko looked back.
Yeah, I watched it.
To decide. I was there, man. I know what happened in the year.
Yeah, it was just nice to go, like, let's watch some of the gags.
So. Yeah, I didn't watch that, but I did watch the version with the actor commentary.
Yeah, what caught me with that one was I was expecting, you know, like, you're kind of reading the subtitles and stuff. I was expecting the subtitles of the characters that I'm watching, but sometimes it was them talking over those characters in their in Osomatsu and Totoko's commentary. I was like, oh shit, no, I wanted to hear his one-liner for that bit. And then in this one, I was waiting for their one-liner from the prior episode that they were now commenting on.
Well, yeah, they split them up into the first three brothers actors and the second three brothers actors.
That was a really good way to do it. Weird thing though, the first three brothers, I have trouble discerning who's who. The second three is much easier.
Yeah. And they have to bleep a load of stuff out.
They keep spoiling shit.
They do.
Also swearing. But
yeah, and also, I think, occasionally mentioning characters' names from other anime.
Yeah.
Are they in character, or are they...
No, they're just themselves.
They're just as themselves, but a lot of it's them discussing sort of how the show's taken off and how it's affected them when they go into work. And also them just taking the mickey out of each other.
Yeah,
I would like to watch that. I think you've sold that. That sounds pretty interesting. Oh, yeah,
it's kind of like a commentary thing where you get the background shit, and it's just like them. The first guys are talking shit about the second three, and the second three are in the studio at the time with them, and they just kind of like, there's like, well, all those first three guys, those guys are assholes. Fuck them. You know, they're just kind of, it's like, dude, you're always fucking laughing and messing up my takes. It's like, yeah, because you're so funny. Come on. just kind of good living.
Yeah, the bit I remember is them having a go at Daisuke Ono for ad-libbing all the time and none of his ad-libs getting the finished product.
Really? Because it sounds like the whole part kind of ad-libbing. You know, I mean, just ranting about baseball for this minute and a half. That's the role.
They come up with a funny thing for it and they're just like, oh yeah, let's just keep joking on this baseball metaphor we've come up with.
Just let him ride. We'll put all this in a drama CD. So.
And then episode 13, which is the one which aired this week, is, let me get the full title because it was a lot of them again. It was Sani Matsu-san, Girly Matsu-san, and Accident.
They're still trying out the different formats.
They are, yes.
Yeah.
And it works. Definitely in this week.
So, Sanimatsu is a weekly drama series, which is episode 3, about a middle-aged salaryman who lives alone, or does he? It turns out he lives with his brothers. Except by the end it's revealed.
Or does he?
Apparently he's inventing all these brothers in his head.
Like, I was wondering in this episode, is this going to be like Osomatsu-san if it was like realistic and depressing?
Well, I think I see some people comment that maybe people had commented that maybe what if all the brothers were just in one of the brothers' heads?
Oh man.
Okay.
And all the characters are voiced by the regular cast. as well.
Really?
They've all got okay. weird different names.
Yeah. And, and the next episode preview reveals there's like hundreds of these brothers.
Yes. Well, it's like, you know, next time, as Animatsu said, you know, Senekatsu is kind of shocking secret, revealing he's actually a woman. And then, like, you know, also like, Senebatsu, Senetatsu, and Senehitsu, like, all show up, and they all are just like, just doing the same pose, and everyone was like pulling down shades. It's like, haha, it's us.
And I believe it's Daisuke Ono as Sanimatsu.
Mm.
Which I don't know what that says about Jiyoshimatsu. But maybe this is his future.
Maybe that's it, yeah.
It's a dark episode. And you think, oh, it's fine. It's fine.
But wouldn't you want to see episode 4 of that?
Yeah, I don't know.
That preview sold me on it, I think.
But... I'm sure it'll come back at some point. Or it'll be revealed, some people were hoping on Twitter, that they hope that maybe those characters exist in the same universe.
Even though
those guys are realistic and they're like completely out of proportion.
Also, the characters in the next one would also meet.
Oh, God.
Mm.
As we get Lady Matsu-san, where we meet the female equivalents of all the brothers, voiced by all the voice actors.
Yep.
Some of them not even attempting to do a lady's voice. I do like that when they're women, that they're as big as assholes as they are.
Oh, they're awful.
Yeah, they're awful. Just not people you'd want to hang around. They're self-destructive. They hate each other.
And this was basically just them having a conversation at a restaurant, isn't it?
Yeah, it's them waiting for their dates or something, isn't it?
Yeah, they want one of those mixture things. And half thinking, oh, I wonder if the guys are going to meet are going to be the Matsuno brothers. And,
yeah.
Great. That would be great.
I don't think they'd stand them up, though, because they're kind of desperate.
Yeah.
They are sniping at each other over various things, you know, oh, you're so fake and you're so vapid and you're so this and that and you're so whatever that. And then, like, no, yeah, but these guys haven't shown up at all. You know, men are scum. Isn't that right, sisters? Yeah, that's right. Men are scum. Fuck these guys. and they're totally correct. Go ahead.
Tell us how men are awful. Niall, tell us.
Well, with the Matsuno brothers and Iami and any other character in the show is anything to go by. Men are scum and deserve to be extinct.
See, I think you could take this episode like as really maybe like anti-feminist or whatever, but I think it's more so, it's not that all women are like this. It's just like if the Osamatsus were women, they would be this much of assholes.
They'd be the worst women.
They're just awful people. Yeah. That's basically it.
And I'm Michiko Yokote is one of the script writers on this episode. I'm assuming she did this and the accident part.
Okay.
Because the sort of the dialogue heavy thing does feel like her.
Mm. Yeah. I did like, you know, the female personas matched the brothers personas that just so well.
It was weirdly so well, but like the just like difference on it, like that, like Jiyoshimatsu was being really manipulative and it's like, oh, I'm going to cry now because you've insulted me and no one's falling for it, you know. it's kind of like just doing that slight change of it. It made it a very interesting kind of alternative version.
And some of them actually have jobs.
Which is a change.
Oh, not as good as the next one, though.
And then the next one is Accident, where... Is it Osamatsu accidentally walks on Sharamatsu having a wife?
Yeah.
Yep.
And then it's basically the entire episode is that each...
Gets ripped!
It's each brother trying to sort of... One gets ripped and he will try and sort of force the ripping onto another brother. And so they all start picking on each other one at a time. It's like the one who's just been picked on this breathes a sigh of relief as someone else becomes the target.
It's kind of like the prior episode where they're women, where they're all just sniping at each other. It's exactly the same thing.
The best nickname, Fappy Matsu. Great nickname.
That might stick, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, because from the commentary episodes, they bring up Totti and they bring up Shitty Matsu. So I think they've realised they could start these trends of nicknames.
Then we need three more nicknames then for... isn't Chorimatsu like Lame Matsu? Or something like that, isn't he?
Well, he's happy about seeing now. So.
I don't know which one he'd rather, but
first one. We'll be three more nicknames in the next season.
I think they were calling him Creepy Matsu or something, weren't they? Something like that. I thought they had something like that for him.
For, and again, this has all continuity again. They reference ESP Kitty once more.
Yes, yeah.
You're not even that creepy. You're just normal. Normal Matsu.
I don't, the bit that slayed me is where he brings out the sign for when any of the brothers want to masturbate. It's just one of them with like the hanging their head in shame. Yeah. In progress.
It's like, you know, I apologize for the inconvenience. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Two bits I loved in it as well, where all of them were revealing where they're hiding their pornography in the house.
Yes.
Because Ishimatsu's is like cat porn. They're all cat girls.
Jushimatsu's is some sort of bug encyclopedia. Yeah,
there's a magazine with what? Bots but right below that, but it is a bug encyclopedia on top of that. Yeah. It's like, what?
Was his underground as well?
No, his was in the attic, I think.
Yeah. One of them's underground. Or under the floorboards, at least.
Yeah.
But I also like that the parents were in the next room listening to the conversation and just snickering is like, wank. So, and they were just like, god damn it, guys. This is why your kids are so shitty.
And yeah, we got new opening themes and new ending themes.
Yeah, yeah.
With like all the characters in the opening theme now.
Mm.
So I assume we're going to see much more of the parents this time around.
Yeah, hopefully.
I think the Girl of Matsu episode was the weak link for me this.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't quite sink into it. It was nice to see like the designs of each of them and stuff, but not as good as the accident. Not as good as the depression first.
I thought the dialogue was pretty snappy, so.
Yeah, I think it just wasn't quite as ambitious as the other two.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's understandable.
But yeah, I thought it was a great episode. Both, I was like, okay, yeah, they're not falling back on gags they did in the first half. They're coming up with new gags they can fall back on later on.
I think it was like, I think you were saying on Twitter, Brian, that it seems like with the prior two episodes, it's like, oh shit, have they ran out of material? Because you got a recap episode and then a commentary on the recap episode.
Well, the commentary is more like a nice add-on, really.
Yeah,
the commentary sounds great.
In the commentary thing, I think they're going on. It's like, wait, so people are like going to watch this on TV? They're going to hear people talking over the cartoon and go like, what the fuck is this?
So was that aired on television when? Like straight
I assume
after
somewhere,
the episode,
yeah.
Or?
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they was on TV because they're in the commentary. They're arguing whether or not it's going to be on the Blu-ray.
okay.
They seem just as confused by it happening as might be. But yeah, it was a nice treat, and it was really good to sort of hear their response and other people's responses to them. They say when they go to other shows, they go, "I can't believe you saying that on Osomatsu."
So it's like Osomatsu like super dirty in Japan.
I think it's.
Is it like South Park or something? It's like, oh, I love you on Osomatsu, and then you can't talk about it because it's like, it's absolute filth.
I'm pretty sure I've seen filthier things, but I think it's
the filthiest, most popular thing. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I think so.
Kind of
what
I mean.
It's the thing which has hit.
Yeah, okay.
And caught on. In part, it's great, but it also got those six actors who are popular, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Righty-ho, let's move on to a big catch-up job. Lovely Muko! Episodes 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So, let's see if we can remember what happens in these episodes. First episode, episode 8, Stick.
It's raining.
Yes.
Komatsu gets him a hilarious raincoat that matches his.
Yes.
And it looks hilarious. Just get that picture and then you've not ruined the episode.
And I believe there's some stick throwing happening as well.
Yeah, and he falls into the pond. She falls into the pond when trying to get the stick. And then she's wet anyway. Raincoat or no raincoat. And there's a rainbow. And I'm sure she's fascinated by the rainbow.
Hmm.
Dogs can't see the full rainbow though.
Can they not? Well, which dog have you just told you they're colorblind?
Dogs can't see the color red, dude.
Well, so they say. So they say.
This is Muko we're talking about, though.
Yes, not just any dog. And also now, it's definitely, maybe not from this episode, but she could definitely understand Komatsu.
Yeah, yeah, we established that.
But I know, but there's times I was like, can she or can she not?
Doesn't always understand what he's saying.
Mm, she's getting self-aware. Yes. She's definitely, she's getting clever.
Episode 9 was Ushikoi.
Was it that episode he was explaining something to the dog and was like, I don't understand, but I'll go along with it.
Probably.
Yeah.
I think it was that one where it was like, look, yeah, go, like hello. It's like, Komatsu, he's gotten very small. And it's his, like, his video on like, the tablet. It's like, what I thought, like, again, well, some of the American questions, I just kind of debunked that as with the rainbow thing, but that's supposed you can't see, like, or like, when you hear the master's voice over, like, a Skype call or something like that, they can't make out that it's them. But it's Smuka we're talking about, so yeah, it's okay.
It's different. I think I read somewhere that dogs don't know, they can't see like the images on a TV, it's just flashing lights to them, but they watch it because people watch it and they want to be liked by the people. It's like, oh, you want to look at the box? Yeah, let's look at the box for a few hours.
Okay, so episode 9 is the one where...
the date?
Yeah, Ushiko.
Meets that girl.
Meets Shinohara, yeah.
Yeah. Has she been in it previously? Because I really yes, can't remember.
She shows up now and again, yeah.
Yes. Right.
She's been to the glass blowing shop.
Yes.
I mean, there's not many characters for me to get confused
Muko
by.
Gets jealous of her, even though yeah. Komatsu apparently has no romantic interest in her whatsoever.
That's right. It starts to snow as well.
Is it an episode, or is that?
I think that's the...
It's around that time, yeah.
Yeah, next episode is Rina's glass blowing experience.
Which is one I can't really remember.
I think that's the one you watched.
It was the one I watched before any of this.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is like that little girl and her father who owns like the only bar in town.
Yes.
I break a glass. Now, it wasn't a valuable glass, but it's sentimental value. So
I was like, it was given to me by a person who made glass who's a friend of mine. I was like, what? You mean the guy who lives down the road? And it's like, I actually don't know that man at all. It's like... Was that just coincidence?
Yeah. And then, like, Muko is, like, scandalized to see that this little girl who before has kind of been harassing her and putting her tail and calling her doggy, where her name is Muko, is scandalized to see this girl Rina up here on her turf.
Like, not as scandalized as she gets in the next episode, which is my favorite Muko expressions. so she's really good at it, it turns out.
Mm.
Yeah.
Better than Ushiko is.
I think it did better than Muko is. Probably not.
Didn't give a dog a chance, did they?
Was that episode 9 or?
That was episode 10.
That was a 10.
Did you notice a bit like, I think it was at the end of episode 9, it was just like a silent kind of bit where it's just him trying to, Komatsu trying to figure out what Muko is thinking?
Yeah.
There's a bit in that, I think it's like animated in Flash or something, because it's better animated. It just suddenly jumped out at me.
Oh, the animation of the series has gotten better as it's gone along.
Yeah, yeah, but there was a difference in lines, thickness and everything like that, and I was like, holy crap, this looks pretty good.
There was a good atomic explosion when Muko was like waiting outside. He's waiting outside, like, you know, the shop. Goes into there, and then like Shinara goes by, and it's like, it's that woman, and she's just so... I guess better appearance, an appearance that, you know, in her own mind this is like full of kaboom. Does it very well.
Then we get Ushiko, keep an eye on the shop. Where?
Yeah.
No. No, you don't.
I mean, that's a pretty good one. It's what you imagine. It's like, hey, would you mind the house for me kind of thing. It's what you imagine that dude is going to do, just fuck around in your house.
He decides that he's going to cook things in the glass kiln. And the expression on Muko's face when she sees him doing this. And she's like, Komatsu, get back here and tell him off. And then she's annoyed at Komatsu. That Komatsu goes to greet her rather than tell him off straight away when he comes back.
He pelts her with snowballs as well at the start, which...
Yeah.
That's hilarious. That's exactly what someone would do. They take liberties.
He tries her food as well.
I'm making that
food look pretty good. I'm going to try some of your dog food, but it's blah, it's dry and tasteless. Why not think?
I mean, we've all tasted dog food anyway.
Yeah.
No.
Have you ever tasted dog food?
I've tasted dog biscuits.
Dog biscuits.
As a child.
Good. I'm sure this is a recurrent topic.
So Niall's the weirdo, not eating dog food. What a weirdo.
It's all right, guys. It's good.
I just have cream eggs.
I've got a lovely shiny coat.
Imagine a queue with baldness. Imagine dog food. Oh, I can't think of any brands. But...
Well, maybe that's why Yoshiko was trying it.
Oh, yes, he is bald, yes.
He's also very fat. There's a line where he's going through the fridge. He's like, what won't you mind me eating?
Such a good character.
Then episode 12 is the one where Mukko dies.
Oh, this is... It's a dark, horrendous. Dark end. I thought this was it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she gets carried away in the snow and catches a cold.
But, you know, it's just like she gets up and points, oh, man, I feel very tired at the one. And she's reflection in the glass and I'm like, man, something's wrong here. My nose isn't shiny today. And it's like the dead star from Fist and All Stars shining upon her. And it's like, oh, no, this is the end for me.
She's got diarrhea as well. She does. She says her poo's runny.
Yeah. It's the one time I've seen your man be a good owner because he clearly recognizes that his dog is.
Oh, he knows. He's
goes about taking care of it. Because other than that, he doesn't seem to know jack shit of what's going on in his dog's world.
If she's talking to him, you assume she wants to go for a walk. All of, well, 99.9% of the time. Other times, she must be ill, which we've learned.
Well, I don't know. I've not had a dog, but I assume that's pretty much common. I've had a cat, and we always assumed it was, oh, you want to go outside? You want to go? You open the door, they just stare outside. Okay, that's not what you want.
True.
And the final episode, Christmas date with Shinohara-san.
Oh.
As the sexy macaroon.
What a nickname.
Thinks he's got a date with Shinohara. But before that, they all meet at the bar. You do a trick with Mukko where it makes it look like she's got human arms. And the best bit is she does not understand what on earth everyone is finding so amusing.
I've always
she likes
found
it
thing...
when Komatsu likes it.
Yeah, she likes it because she likes to do it for him. But I always found that kind of thing amusing where someone sticks a dog's head in a shirt and has human arms. I don't know why. I find it funny, but I never considered it from the dog's point of view. The dog's just like, all right. Just hands, I guess.
Well, I think that's my funniest kind of humor. I love seeing those videos. I would watch those videos on a live stream 24/7.
And Ushiko's got like some sort of death metal Santa costume on at the start.
Yes. She's got like a skull for a belt buckle and stuff like that. And obviously got his white beard on.
Yeah, I've been enjoying his like kind of like shirts and hoodies over the last few episodes because there's one that said like, kill you, like, the man mercenary towel from Dragon Ball. And, when he's like, you know, I think they're like, saying, oh, Ushiko, you eat anything. And saying, no, I don't eat just anything. He turns around and the emblem on the back of his jacket is, I am hungry. and a meat thing in the back of it as well.
Yeah. The gag is that he only eats at this bar. He doesn't actually drink.
Which is weird because your man doesn't serve food except for him because he always asks for food. He's like, you want me to give... Because, yeah, when he was minding your man's place, he drove to the bar. He's like, hey, can you get me a frozen pizza? And he's like, you know this is a bar, right? I mean, like, I could do it, but...
Now, as he is a real person, do you think all those T-shirts are real as well?
They look so. Like they're amazing. Where would you
get... He could fit in any TV show, that character. Like, I could see him in Daria or... I seriously could. He could be in anything.
But yeah, he thinks he's got this date, so he leaves early. Wanders, meets Shinohara, and she takes him back to the bar, because that's where she was going.
So wait, is it not a date?
No.
She was basically inviting him to the bar, because, hey, we're all going down to the bar for Christmas, which you were already at, so you knew that.
Oh, that hurts.
Yep, and he made a big deal about it and said, screw you guys, I got a date tonight. So.
Oh, that hurts to know.
Which none of them were paying attention to, and no one noticed. Like when he came back, it wasn't like, oh, your date didn't work out. It was just like, oh, hey, man, you came back.
Komatsu was drunk, isn't he? And he keeps he's the same story.
He's just getting drunker as he goes.
So this guy walked in. He had one in his head. It's like one of those like magic picture things, optical illusions. It was so weird.
I don't know what he means.
We never get the full story, but we do get it three times, yeah.
So, Dwayne, are you warming up? To Mukko.
Oh,
a little, because I figured this would fucking just put me off altogether watching this many episodes in a row.
Also, I think the animation's getting better.
It is a little.
Oh, because the best thing in episode 13 is he switches the kiln off for New Year. And this is when Muko thinks,
oh, yeah.
He's finally turning into a dog. He switched the kiln off. This is it. He's giving up being a human being.
I didn't understand the logic of that, but I guess it's dog logic. It's just like, aha, this is a clear indicator of becoming a dog.
Yeah, because the earlier episode, we've got to mention that he bought some moisturizing cream and put it on his nose.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And he made his nose shiny, and that was another sign that he was turning into a dog for Muko.
Yeah.
And the best thing is when he turns into it in her dream, they like yes. run along, shout each other's names.
Muko! What's up, Muko?
Also, to hear him like do the excited shouts that Muko does, like when they're both pulling the towel and he's doing it in his dry as fuck voice.
And doing the chewing sound, going giddy, 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 giddy.
Yeah. The performances are certainly growing on me anyway, bizarrely.
Oh, I love the character. There's not a character I dislike in this.
Which is good news because it's still running.
Woo!
We Yay. Have nothing else to podcast about. We will have lovely Muko to podcast about.
Is it popular? I don't know.
I
really don't
know. I can't imagine it's super popular. I mean, it runs, the comic's obviously popular enough to warrant this.
And well, we
like it. At least three of us do.
Yeah.
One of us, we're slowly brainwashing.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Well, you're cool, don't you? Muko's cool. Muko cool.
Okay, let's move on to Concrete Revolutio, episodes 11, 12, and 13.
Oh,
I'll sit back.
The old
podcast knuckles here.
See, this was going to be the worst one to delay, because you're going to have so much to cover.
And well, I know nothing.
It is also handily a single arc, though.
I was hoping you'd have caught up by now, Anthony, and just like, I have so much to ask. It's just like...
Oh, no. I'm doing this on purpose. I will wait years till I watch, if at all.
So, we are introduced in these three episodes to Claude. What's his epithet after
him? Mysterious sword Claude.
Claude.
No. But the mist is spelled M-I-S-T, as if kind of, as some kind of fog or something is going to come into it, but it doesn't really.
And so, yeah, he's this swordsman with a motorbike helmet in the shape of a skull.
Like the Skull Man?
Yes, like the Skull Man.
Yes.
And he's a swordsman with a skull face like Ogun Bat.
What are the eyes thing from?
Also from Ogun Bat. That's the Ogun Bat's enemy, I think Lord Nezu.
He's got four different eyes.
He has four different eyes, but they're stacked on top of each other.
Mm.
And so this guy, when he powers up, you can see this stack of eyes along one side of the helmet. And he's got a superpower that his body apparently is a factory and he can absorb metal and turn it into other things.
Like he absorbs a thing into himself and then like he pulls like a gun like it will kind of come out of his hand or something.
Who's like that?
Mechagodzilla is what apparently that's a reference to.
Well, I thought that was the finger guns.
No, the factory inside the body is a Mechagodzilla.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
that's right.
Because he's the Mechagodzilla to Jiro's Godzilla. Because I rewatched episode 4, and Jiro's Godzilla. There isn't a separate invisible Godzilla. He is Godzilla.
Well, I've got a theory about slightly more than that, but pretty much.
He's lots of things. He's also, so Jin, I reckon, is Golden Bat for being the skull-faced swordsman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's Mechagodzilla for being the equivalent to... the artificial equivalent of Jiro and having the factory in his body.
But you know the way Jiro's like a cyborg 009?
Yeah, so he's Black Ghost's leader.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's Skull Man.
The thing is, like, he's all of the good guys with scarves, whereas this new guy is like all of the bad dudes with scarves.
Yeah. So if we also
doing exactly the same thing. So he's the antithesis of those kind of characters.
Yeah, so if Jiro is also going to become Kamen Rider, then he's Skull Man, the precursor, precursor.
Mm.
And if Jiro's Kikaider, then he's probably Hakaider.
Yeah.
Because that's where he gets probably where he gets the black and yellow designs from.
He has the cape, that's the Captain Harlock cape, isn't it?
Oh, it's Golden Bat's cape. But yeah,
Captain Harlock. Oh, he has the same one. Yeah. Okay. I just thought the collar looked
particularly cool. The revived Golden Bat has that cape.
How is this allowed so many things?
Because it's its own thing enough that it gets away with it.
Because it doesn't look it's not an exact copy.
It's an homage.
Yes.
As the French say.
So this guy shows up at the debut of this Antares, isn't it? The
it's like a new U.S. submarine.
Yes. Shows up and slices it in half.
Well, it initially makes him out of the water. It looks like he's like one punched the front of it, so it's all fucking dented, which is awesome.
And so this is in episode 11. You've also got the Imperial Ad Agency. You'll be trying to recruit Jiro in this episode.
Yeah, and he's still of the thing. It's like, why are you trying to recruit me? I don't have superpowers.
But they also he also says, weren't you trying to get rid of superhumans? And they're kind of like, well, we only want to keep superhumans. We don't want to deal with like aliens or witches or demons or.
Yeah, so they're human centric, not.
I think they're superhuman centric.
Yeah, yeah, not super being centric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the, is it Satomi is wearing a old man disguise.
Yeah, what the fuck was that about? Because he was just like, and while we're trying to recruit Jiro, we're going to shine your shoes. What's her name?
I can't remember.
Yokai one.
Oh, Amy. Amy.
He's shining her shoes, and then he takes off the fake beard. It's like, haha, it was me all along. It's like, why were you pretending to be a shoe shiner?
That he's just that good. It could be anybody. It could be like your cousin. It could be like the guy who sold you your newspaper today.
Yeah.
It could be anybody.
It must be a reference to some like old character who used to be constantly in disguise.
His name is reference to one fictional character, one real person.
Yeah, one very real person.
Yes. So let me find my Twitter. Yeah, so he is Satomi Yoshiaki. So he's named for the fictional spy from the 1930s, Hongo Yoshiaki.
Hmm.
And also for the World War II opium king, Hajime Satomi. So I assume the idea is that part of him represents sort of the fictional characters who would like support the idea of imperialism.
Yeah.
Pre-war. So it's like, we're helping out these countries by sending spies into them. We're like very paternalistic. And he also represents the reality of what those people were actually doing. Profiteering.
That's really interesting, like, because we're getting a lot more characters that are literally based off real people, and he's kind of one of the more interesting ones anyway. I'm curious as to see where they go with him.
Yeah. So before I saw that on French Toast site, I thought he was supposed to be Harry Mao. The spy who became fictionalized,
right, like that would make sense, yeah. Hmm.
Who filled a similar role, and that would also make sense because there was like a revival of the character in the 60s,
right?
So he may also be influenced, but I think that's the sort of character he represents because we learn in the next episode that sort of his role pre-war,
yeah.
Which I do hope we get an episode in the next season showing pre-war stuff.
That'd be really cool.
So apparently this is an existential problem for the Bureau, is what Cloud represents. And it certainly does, because this submarine contains loads of superhumans who've been turned into machines and are powering this submarine, apparently.
Yeah, they're like built into it or whatever. Because when you cut it open, you can't but see the clearly humanoid bodies like just built into the framework of the submarine now.
And we see there's like a concert by Angel Stars, the band.
Yeah.
They're there. So there's like kids there as well. One of the kids is a character we'll learn is called Psy Kicker.
Was his name Super Kicker, or because they kept Psy changing his name?
I think.
Okay. All right. We finally see him. He's been in the intro sequence as the kind of
And he was in the bar.
The spaceman looking dude.
Yeah. And I forget which character he's based on, but.
I think there was on the there's, notes I was reading.
There's
there was
a live action of, character who is.
Yeah, based I think on. There was some Gatchaman in there as well.
Yeah, they reckon like the thing he rides on is similar to the Gatchaman. I think that's more of a stretch than.
Oh, I figured it was just the glass helmet thing.
Because the Esper character is.
Oh, he has a.
He has got like a visor similar.
Oh, okay.
So he's there. He doesn't do much this episode. Your cop, he does a lot because he gets into a fight with Cloud and loses an arm.
Yeah.
He gets rebuilt by, we see him being, what they're called, they got a great name.
Oh my god, I fucking love
Strange Power Risk Management Office.
Yes.
They're what you imagine time travelers would look like.
And he's concerned that they're using magic to rebuild him, and they do the great reverse Arthur C. Clarke line of
yes,
sufficiently advanced magic is indistinguishable from technology.
So it's like it's the man and the woman in their like overcoats and fancy hats and cravats and everything, and they have these three creepy children which they use to make magic dust of like people who like of past events.
Yeah, as we've seen in episode 12, is they got magic sand.
I would watch a show about those guys so much, like well, but that goes for nearly every character.
And they're apparently based on a late 1960s mystery show.
Mm.
But yeah, those characters, their character designs, because we've seen the dad and the triplets before, but this is the first time we see the mum. And the combined character designs, the fact they've all got the same colour-coded pattern scarves are really good.
And the really kind of, like, just the cool, like, weird techno, steampunky magic shit they got going on is pretty great.
And Cloud, Cloud makes this speech about if you're superhuman, you've got to be after, was it freedom, justice, or peace?
What I really love about that speech is the end theme kind of coming up into it. Like you were saying, Anthony, it kind of does something when you bring the theme of the show into the thing. It makes it, like, this is what the show is about. These things that I'm talking about right now, because we're using the background theme to kind of bolster it up, you know?
I'm a huge fan of that.
Mm.
Kiku gets involved and she sees him sort of giving off an energy signature similar to how Jiro did when he went out of control.
Yeah, it kind of looks like his swirling flame.
Before she passes out. And so she comes to the incorrect conclusion that Jiro is...
Well, it's the kind of thing of like, well, he shoots off energy like Jiro, and he likes wearing helmets like Jiro, so it's like it's kind of like one of those, I got this mystery figured out. It's surely not Jiro's long-lost brother.
Well, yeah, and also they kind of make it clear in the next episode that it sort of calls back to the very first episode, is she's the one character who reads superhero comics.
Yeah.
And so her idea of what a superhuman should be, or what Jiro, more specifically what Jiro should be, is being fulfilled by Claude.
Yeah, yeah.
And so therefore she adds one and one and together and... decides, oh, I want Jiro to be a superhero. There is this superhero, therefore it must be Jiro. Plus there's all these other visual clues which make me think he is.
Well, I mean, like on any other show, he would be the guy who dresses up and thing. He has a transforming robot car. He wears these cool suits. He works for the mysterious agency as a cool dude. It's like, yeah, he'd totally be the superhero. That it makes sense in the context that she sees reality as the comics that she reads, even though... technically, this reality is the comics that people read.
They probably read comics about, like, you know, very average things about, like, they probably read, like, Section Chief Kosaku Shima, you know, just like, a guy in office, you know, trying to get the project done on time before deadline for make sure the project makes profit. That's what's so exciting. So I gotta go to my real job where I fight monsters and giant robots and stuff.
Claude gets away. They have, Jiro and Kiku have an argument. And she's taking her to the doctors. And then a few months later, we've got the meeting with Mitsuo and the three aliens. Mitsuo's this guy from the Defense Department.
You know the way it does like the 3 month time skip there? Is that like all, we've already seen what happened in those 3 months, right?
Yeah, I believe
that's so. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, cause I was thinking when she's acting slightly different, the witch girl is acting different in some of the other episodes. That's possibly why we didn't see.
I was going to say, I'm not sure we have seen that particular
section. I was wondering if we had. Yeah, I'd have to see a timeline.
there is one on the site, but only in the Japanese site, not the English. Annoyingly. So the three aliens, gas aliens, are in a meeting to discuss their, what do they call it? It's the revised superhuman law.
Revised superhuman supervision law?
That's it, yeah. And Akita steps in and he's like, oh, there's somebody who isn't an alien here.
There's a normal dude here. What the fuck, guys? I thought this was just for gas monsters.
And yeah, there's this guy called Mitsuo, who apparently used to be in the Defense Department. And he's here to say, I'll help you push through this law. And he steps outside, he's got to ask the questions about the submarine. He's like, oh, well, if you're saying the Americans are evil, then surely that must mean the Japanese government's evil as well. And the three guys are like looking out as if to say, that guy's just hijacked whatever plans we had.
That's our plan. We want to do that. Stop telling people, jerk.
You can just tell they don't even say that. It's just like from
their dirty look that they're throwing.
It's like, oh, that's us fucked. Our carefully planned out bureau operation and
yeah,
all gone down the drain.
Goddamn government.
Anything else in this episode? Oh yes, of course there is. Yes,
yeah. Yes.
Kiko goes, has been told to meet at a clinic.
The abandoned warehouse.
She seemed to get a call from Mysterious Sword Claude, but
yes.
Then he's like, what the fuck are you doing here? So I'm not exactly sure how she got there.
I
think she was set up by...
I'm pretty sure she was set up, but by who?
Satomi, because Satomi set somebody else up in the next episode.
Oh, yeah, of course. Sorry, it's a lot to follow, so I'm kind of like, wait a minute.
Possibly also settled by Claude.
Yeah, yeah. Not that he expected what happened.
Well, did he? Because in the next episode...
Yeah, kind of, but it's...
He knows things.
He knows things, but I guess he didn't expect to happen to the extent that it did. Because he didn't seem quite surprised.
It's so like, yeah, the very end of this episode, she gets a hot flush, eats one of these... Yeah, he definitely knows. He definitely knows, because he's given her the things
to turn... He's the one who's given her the roots.
And eats a root that... Earl doesn't want her to eat, and she turns into like a devil man version of herself.
Yeah, she turns into devil man woman or devil
man lady?
Yeah. All her clothes fall off. She does the magical girl evil transformation.
Yeah, Earl is terrified.
Yeah, he's truly like, oh fuck.
He's like switched from being bossy to being absolutely petrified.
And also she's like commanding him, Earl, give me my killer sword.
Hobbit's tail. It's not a sword, it's a whip.
Yeah, it's a sword whip thing. Yes. It's pretty sweet.
Yes, because she stepped in and because she sees Claude murdering loads of doctors and nurses at this clinic.
Yep. Mm. And it's a fairly grim looking thing. Initially I thought he was dead because he was covered in blood. And then he kind of moves like, oh, hello, I didn't see you there.
So next episode, we get a flashback of how Kiku met this doctor who called Jin. Jin apparently knew she was this heir to the Devil Realm, or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And mentions her mother. So her mother better show up in the next series. Now they've mentioned that she's got a mother. And so apparently she's here to find a groom. And once she's found a groom, she can return to hell. And become the Queen of Hell.
Yeah, see, they keep the whole season, their whole series, they've kind of been going like, but we have to defeat evil monsters. Like, but I'm a witch. It's like, yeah, but you're okay.
I steal people's souls. This is my whole deal.
Because we thought Amy was just being like a metaphor calling her a devil earlier on. No, see, that was literal.
No, it's literal. She's a witch, has sold her soul to the devil, is involved in demonic things. And while she is, she does gain power from making people's lives happy. She's doing it for potentially evil purposes.
And so because she's not from this world, he's giving her this medicine, which is some sort of root, like horseradish or wasabi. Then we go back to the present, where the Strange Power Risk Management Office are investigating this clinic with their magic sands. They discover a secret basement where they discover they've been experimenting on superhumans.
Yeah. And it's like on an island, a joint Japanese-US lab.
Yeah, it's the Bonin Island, so it's the equivalent of the discovery that America and Japan had secretly been keeping nukes on those islands against the law.
Mm. Yeah.
Jaguar's out guarding Mitsua. Kiku's mad at this because that guy had been... He's like in charge of the ninja superhuman cops, isn't he?
Wild Seven, yeah.
Yeah,
he's the chief of ninja cops.
Yeah, and he apparently planned out some sort of measures to deal with superhumans if superhumans ever rise up.
Like, I like this guy, but he's kind of a dick.
Kicker gets mad, still thinks Jiro's Claude, and gives him the photo that's the thing I forgot to mention in the previous episode, that Claude
The photograph.
The photo of Amy, I can never remember his name.
Professor Utonium.
Jiro and some mysterious guy who we've not seen before.
It's like, oh, you don't remember him? Oh, that's from way back. It's like, no, I have no memory of this person. What? You grew up together. What?
Jiro goes home. The maid's there. I was wrong. The maid's been there since episode 2 when I rewatched episode 2. She's there.
I was going to say, has that maid been there the whole time?
Yeah, we met. There's a conversation in the previous episode, isn't there, where she confronts the professor as if to say, are you sure? Are we really sure that Jira's actually in love with Amy and Amy isn't just, like, magicking?
That's right, yeah. She really doesn't like Amy at all. She's really hoping that Jiro will get with Kiko. Because she's like, oh, you know he does this thing. And she keeps telling him her secrets about Jiro, just like regular everyday things. You know, he can't eat spicy food. You know, that kind of thing.
The professor and Satomi are having a conversation where we learn they used to be superhumans themselves before the war. Satomi support, they both worked at the lab that we had mentioned with the android episode.
Yeah.
But Satomi worked abroad while he was at the lab. And he doesn't seem happy to see him after he's gone. He's got a very glum expression that Satomi had shown up. Then we get the Russian Superman, whose name I've forgotten.
Super Yuri Gagarin.
Yeah, who's been invited to Japan by Claude, but we see Claude and Satomi are in cahoots, and Satomi has tipped off Master Sigma that there's this Russian Superman coming into Japanese airspace.
I thought that was really good, because initially I thought he was, because they keep bringing up Flash Gordon with Master Sigma, and I was thinking, like, oh, is this blonde Russian Superman, is he Flash Gordon, but you've met him from Russia rather than the US? But then, of course, the Gagarin stuff comes up, and I think his name is partially from Laika.
Yeah. But I think he's definitely Gagarin, like, seen as this
he's the speech of, if you could only see how beautiful Earth is, as I've seen from space, you wouldn't have war anymore.
Yeah, Garuboy Riker.
Yeah. Riker, that's it, like yeah.
Riker!
Yeah.
So he gets shot down and crashes into the school where Psychica goes to school.
That school has a lot of shit going on.
They have a lot of superhumans at that school.
All the schools crash into.
Super Jimi Hendrix goes to that school. Mega Man, Cardboard Box Drill Man, a super baseball player.
Oh dear.
So then the cops show up, the bureau shows up, the Superman's died, Dark Kiko shows up when Jiro comes to clash with Claude.
I love the way Claude, like, straight away goes like, oh, you're Claude the terrorist. He's like, no, I'm Claude the cool dude who's friends with the students. And they're just like, oh, okay, cool. And everyone else is like, dude, he's a fucking, like, he killed a bunch of people.
Yeah, and Psychic is like, oh, I can't trust adults anymore. And then basically Claude lures Jiro to a third location and exposes the truth about Rainbow Knight.
What was fucking amazing about that is we've seen this dude, like, I'll pull this thing into my body and, like, pull a gun out, or I'll chop this fucking submarine in two, or I'll just mysteriously walk out of the shadows or murder all these fucking doctors and expose secret labs and shit like that. But, and this one is just like, he's on the phone, and he's like, hey, I'm on the phone. You know, Jiro walks in, and it's just so plain.
He's on the phone going, yes, conspiracy. It's kind of, almost kind of melting through him. I'm on the phone. 5 minutes, a beautiful 5 minutes.
Yeah, he just sort of gestures, yeah, come in, I'm just on the phone. I thought that was wonderful.
Yeah, it turns out he's talking to the professor, and as the professor admits that they murdered Rainbow Knight to get the bureau started, he hands the phone to Jiro so he can hear his dad.
Like, so, say the most fucked up thing, like, yeah.
And then Akita rushes in, and he's going, oh no, didn't want you to hear that, Jiro.
Whoops.
Got to protect the Earth. You got to understand he's fed in the bureau to help the Earth. And then Claude's like, I know about you. It's not even your Earth anyway. And kills Akita and a giant green billow of gas. I believe cigarette smoke, as someone describes it in the next episode. Amy describes him as
the only kind of gas
alien cigarette smoke.
I love the representation of him as like a green cloud with his wizard eyes in the middle of it. It's so cartoony. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if it's here or the next episode where they kind of explain the aliens are there to sort of usher superhumans along into.
I think it's the next episode when he confronts the guy who, the one human in that meeting of aliens and gases. I'm having trouble figuring it out as well because I watched them all in one big kind of laugh.
So the next episode, the Strange Power Risk Management Office expose what the government have been doing with the American government on these islands and how the Bureau didn't do anything to stop it.
Yeah. It's like, so basically we've been kidnapping superpower children and like, if this guy has like a super arm, we'll chop it up and give it to this guy and try and make a good superhuman, like the best thing, which is just like, human experimentation and shit. It's nasty.
They're like, they've just been to the funeral. They're like, Jaguar, did you know the chief was an alien? Jaguar's like, what does it matter? He still did good work. He was an alien or not.
We know how Jaguar feels about like, it's like, if you get results, it doesn't matter if you end up killing yourself from the past.
And they like, oh, and Jiro's like, for the chief's memory, we need to get this revised superhuman law enacted, and they got to go and catch Claude and Keke. Then we move to, it's coming up to October 21st, 1968, World Peace Day, which is where student rioters tried to stop an American fuel tanker arriving at a train station. That happens in real life, and it happens in this as well.
Yeah.
The Imperial Ads guys confront Matsua, try to convince him not to vote yes on this law, and they kind of point out, they sort of trick him into admitting that he's sort of made this so it will turn superhumans into, they will no longer have human rights once they register as a superhuman.
Yeah, if you register as a superhuman, you're not
a human.
You don't have the human rights, so they can do whatever the fuck they want, including all that experimentation.
Exploited so much.
He's like, oh, I didn't think of that.
I don't want to do that. Whoa, wow.
Of course I won't do that. And as they
that
leave,
would be awful.
It's like the bizarre thing is while this is happening, we're seeing like cuts to this tiny, like Choro Q sized police car wandering down the halls of the government offices.
And there's a tiny like toy car trying to bust its way through a door, but it's a fucking toy car, so it's not doing a great job.
So it comes in as they leave, and Akita is back. He's possessing this toy car. And he straight up kills a guy.
Yep. And now he is the government minister.
Yeah, I think he kills him by possessing him. Like, basically, he hollows out the shell and now he lives in it. Is that kind of how his power works, I guess?
I guess.
He doesn't explain it, but it's clear, like, that dude isn't fucking...
I thought, though, okay, it's like, I possess him and be the guy control him, but when he meets his other guest boys later on, they say... You've killed a man. You've, old man.
Yeah.
Or people are not going to like this at all.
Yeah, what if our brothers in space find out?
They're not going to find out. I'm going to get results.
Then we get Earl trying to hit on Amy.
That is fucking brilliant. Because in context, it looked like he was hitting on her all the time. But now he actually was. He's like, yes. I think I need a real woman. You know, just rubbing up off her. It's like, dude, you're a creepy little doll. That's not cool.
So Jiro turns up, but they tie him to like some spinny thing in a restaurant.
Like just a lazy... What's he called? Lazy Waiter? Lazy Susan.
Yeah, and that forces him to explain what's happening with Keke. And apparently this is a combination of the drugs, hypnotism, and getting annoyed at Jiro brought out her evil side.
But can we turn her back? It's like, no, that's her true self. Yeah. What you know was like a fucking farce, essentially.
Well, no, because it's like...
That's what he claims initially.
Yeah, but yes. Yeah. But and then Amy explains, then get rid of this evil side by turning it into a tiger.
Yes.
And I'll do this for you, Jiro, as long as you never see her again.
I love that. It's like, oh, I can totally separate her evil side. I'll just turn it into a tiger. Perfect.
Yeah. Well, this well-known kind of like Japanese folktale.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
But it's an interesting everyone solution. Knows that.
Yeah. Then we get to the riot. And Satomi is there. He seems to want superhumans to rise up. I'm still not entirely clear on his motives and the professor's motives. Maybe them too. Because I think we've generally got everybody else's
Yeah.
Damn.
Well, like, I've seen it once, like, you know, I think it's like, where it's accurate or not, it gets caught up in one thing. You just want to, like, push the superhero agenda because you want to, like, just make money off of it. Which may or may not be true, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
With the way, like, the professor was just talking to Master Ultima, it seemed to be both like, hey, we're both guys who pull strings, what do you think of this? Oh, it's pretty fucked, isn't it? Yeah, all right, see you later, you know. they're just both puppet masters just going comparing notes essentially.
He like says, oh no, there wasn't going to be a feel thing. He says, oh no, we leaked that.
Yeah,
so we could gather all these people in one place.
Then Master Ultima is just like, oh, I have to go now. My planet needs me.
Well, that's a bit later on. Once they've taken care of Claude, he's like, oh, this is purely a Japanese domestic matter. I'm off.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically everybody shows up at this point. We go to the Sazae-san family and they're like, oh, the kids are like this because they've heard their parents saying, oh, we don't want war anymore following World War II.
Yeah. It's interesting that the kids in the Sazae family like figure that out before the parents do, because it's basically the same thing. It's like, why are kids acting up? And it's like, well, because that's what they're fucking taught.
So go Master Ultima, we get...
The band is helping out the students for once.
Yeah, we get the superhuman... Well, I think because they want the superhumans to rise up, so...
Yeah.
I assume at some point maybe that band will turn on.
Yeah, but I mean, like, from the students' point of view, the band seemed to be like, yeah, they've come to support us with their magical music.
They've come to rock the vote.
they do kind of have to be convinced later on to help out.
Yeah.
The guys from the superhuman bar pour out because they're like, well, those kids are protesting for us, so we should go out there. And apart from, electrical guy.
Lucifer.
Judas, isn't it?
Yeah, he isn't sure what to do because he's not sure what.
Some one of those names.
Judah, I can't remember if it was Judah or Judas.
Some biblical name, anyway.
Yes, so he stays behind. We see Psychic, Raito.
Oh, all the cartoon characters as well.
They all pour out, yeah.
Cartoon Elephant Man, yeah.
As they got more
help too!
I was going to say, as they got more lines, I really hope they get an episode next season.
I want to see what their deal is. It's amazing. Where are all these cartoon people around?
Psychic is heading, meets up with Raito. Earth-chan shows up and threatens to beat everybody up.
Yeah.
Daitetsu and his robot show up and attack Earth-chan in like a mirror of what we see happening in the future.
Yeah. I did like the Earth-chan thing. It was like, hey, Earth-chan, which side are we on? Everyone kind of stops to see if they're on the right side. He's like, I'll beat all you motherfuckers up. Also, the super kicker, the initial thing of the, you know, the rockets on his butt, I was kind of like, those look dumb as hell, but then they made them look so goddamn cool.
Yeah, Jaguar's made loads of spider robots.
He's made loads of cars that turn into, like, Fujikomas from, or Tachikomas from Ghost in the Shell.
Claw shows up driving one of these cars, and he doesn't need the battery pack, because he can power it in the same way that Jiro powers Equus.
I did like that reveal, like, at the preview of the prior episode, where you see the centaur thing.
Equus.
You saw Equus fighting another robot, and it's like, oh my god, has he got another robot? Because you didn't know how they were going to bring in another robot until that point.
And it's revealed that the helmet is boosting Claude's powers.
The helmet's like made out of other superheroes or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Kiko shows up to give weapons to Claude. But basically Equus's weapons to Claude, but they're gone.
Pull them out of them pocket dimension that he has. Yeah.
Because Amy has put them in one of those, I can't remember what the yokai's called. Like
a giant skeleton.
Yeah, the giant skeleton ones.
I can't think of the name of them either.
And then Amy attacks Kiko, shoves all in her mouth.
And to keep her from casting spells, I guess?
Turns her into a tiger woman and pulls the tiger woman out of her and turns it into a little tiger cub.
And then she's holding her naked for the rest of the episode.
Yeah. And he's all gone at this point. And I'm thinking, does he show up in any of the future moments?
I don't recall that because she doesn't turn into a witch girl in the later ones.
No, that's true.
Yeah, so that's what I was thinking happened.
But I just missed that he wasn't in any of those future flash forwards.
Like, I didn't know she never turned into magical witch.
Yeah, because I mentioned right at the start that she's now using the same gun.
The ray gun.
Exactly.
The ray gun that Jaguar's got.
Yeah, yeah. So she's using the tech from the agency, not the not her own powers like he always was using. So yeah, maybe he's gone. Either that or he's certainly not with her anymore.
So to fight this, he unlocks his arm. Jiro does.
Yeah.
And Equus goes berserk in a Evangelion-esque moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically just instantly beats Claude. It's like not even a fight.
Yeah, it's like you were having all this backup power from the helmet and everything, and it's like, yeah, but if you know, he unlocks his arm, you're screwed.
He damages the helmet, Tetsuo. I put Tetsuo because it's a like Tetsuo body hammer.
Yeah.
Type moment where he tries to absorb the metal, but because the helmet's broken, he just turns into a statue.
Made of metal, yeah.
Yeah, like your man did from Mountain Horse.
Yeah,
and they aim me to shut him down, but she's sort of crying, saying, "Can anyone help Jiro?" Judas hears the cry from miles away, and he recruits Mountain Horse, the Ultraman guy, whose name I've forgotten.
The alien
Galaxian S.
No,
get a space. I don't know. Yeah. Ultraman.
Yeah, Ultraman, Psychicker, and Raito, and your Ghost Boy, and everyone has a sing-along to help. And they manage to free him from Equus, and Amy reseals his arm. And Earth-Chan gets killed, apparently, while the rioting was happening.
Yeah, she's broken on the ground. Which made me kind of like, oh no, not Earth-Chan. But she protects the goodness.
But see, it's okay, she's going to be okay.
Yeah. Astro Boy ended in 1968.
Yeah.
And then was revived in whichever year we see her revived.
Yeah. It's spot on.
So sort of you're no longer seeing Kiko thing backfires on Amy, as rather than Amy leaving the Bureau, Jiro's left the Bureau.
Mm.
And also, Mitsuha has mysteriously changed his mind on voting on the...
Well, it's almost like he's a different person.
Yes. And so the other two aliens confront him, like, say, you said you were going to vote yes. And then his eyes turn green. And they realize...
And he has the chief's voice again.
Yes. They realize it's Akita, and he's like, oh, change of plans, lads.
I'm on this monkey farm now.
Yeah, I think that's the point where they say something about they want to uplift humanity to be like, I guess, energy beings like them, even though they're made of gas or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know exactly, but...
It's not entirely clear what exactly...
But they're also, as you said, worried that their space brothers will find out that one of them's killed somebody.
Yeah, whatever mission they're on has been compromised, clearly.
And then we get the preview bit. I made some screenshots of what the things they say in it. Attack of the flying saucers. Explosive increase in superhuman population. Jiro Hitoyoshi the Fugitive versus, and the deification / evolution era begins.
Whoa, deification.
I really love the post, I guess it wasn't really post credits, it was just the credits kind of...
Oh yeah, the final bit before that. Yes, I forgot to mention that. Yeah, so we then flash back to 1945. In Hiroshima.
The last three episodes haven't been a flashback, and this is the big fucking one. They were saving up for this one.
As we see the professor hearing a baby crying, and they're at the exact same point where in our universe...
There's also the ruins of the Enola Gay. Because that thing didn't, crash.
Crash in our universe, yes. But in the exact point where the little boy nuclear bomb landed on Hiroshima, there is a little boy in a crater. And coming out of him is this gigantic mark in the shape of a kaiju, which is spread out all over Hiroshima.
Yeah, a burn in the shape of Godzilla.
Yes.
It's kind of like one of the nuclear shadow, essentially.
Yeah, so what do you think? The bomb? Is he a boy who's absorbed the bomb?
So I think, right, that I could be wrong, but you know the way like Godzilla was inspired by the nuclear bomb?
Yes.
I think Jiro's the nuclear bomb.
Yeah, I think the nuclear bomb wasn't a nuclear bomb. It was some kind of like condensed kaiju bomb.
Like the energy that Giant Monster has is somewhat condensed down into a bomb form to be weaponized and used to drop from a plane that way.
I mean, interesting idea of making Little Boy an actual little boy. Is there going to be a fat man then? Or I guess since the Enola Gay crash, they didn't actually hit.
I don't know. But I think it holds up because, this new submarine was supposed to be a new nuclear power submarine, but it was powered by superhumans.
Superhumans,
so,
exactly. Yeah, the Duo was like a superhuman weapon.
So maybe, there is no nuclear power. It's just powerful beings that's having their energy contained and used for other ends.
But that's not the only metaphor that it is, of course, as well.
No, it's a lot of things.
Yeah, because I think he's kind of like the spirit of the age.
Yeah.
And definitely. So that's why he's, everyone else is fairly simple in who they are equivalent to. He kind of changes with the times.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting because you see that in a lot of in a lot of Japanese stuff, the kind of references to the atomic bomb and obviously how this affected people and stuff. But to kind of go but how did it affect the atomic bomb? How does he feel? You know, I think that's kind of what they're doing as well.
Also it's shot like Superman's origin as well.
Yeah.
That's the other great thing about it. It's like they found an Elseworlds Superman story which DC haven't got around to telling yet. What if Superman was the atomic bomb?
Yeah, it's pretty great. I am so glad this is still going. Because, man.
It's kind of that answer for it, isn't it?
I'm having fun getting there, though, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, and I imagine there's going to be so much. Because it's the... Henshin boom is the era they seem to be covering next. So
yes, fucking you think it's going to skip between 70s and 80s or?
Well, that was what I was thinking today. I was like, is it going to flash back to the 60s anymore, or is it going to show you bits of the 80s? Is it going to end Akira?
Oh man!
Or is it only going to play with the 70s?
Yeah, no, it easily could. Like, there's plenty just to work from there.
Yeah. And they've got more writers on. They've got Anthony's favourite.
Oh, yeah?
Yen?
Yeah. Uribochi?
He's doing something on it.
Okay.
And Nakashima from Kill la Kill and Gurren Lagann.
Yeah.
And Masaki Tsuji's back as well. So presumably they'll get him to write something he's already written. Again.
It's what he's good at.
He is. There's, I think you wrote on, he didn't write any of the, big tokusatsu shows, but I think he did write on a show which is much more like Bewitched than the Magical Girl. So it's a live action magical girl superhero show about an alien who becomes a teacher.
So is there any properties from the 80s you want to see in the next season?
Oh, from the 70s, I know there's definitely things I want to see.
Sorry, from the 70s.
Yeah, so I want to see a loop on the third episode.
Yeah.
There's got to be that there.
A Gonagai episode.
Yes.
Gatchaman and or Sentai episode.
Some Tatsunoko Mania would be.
I was wondering if they were going to let those detective boys grow up and all become Gatchaman kind of things.
Yes, so do you think those things, those helmets... were like them, somebody trying to recreate Claude's helmet that we saw.
Yeah, some sort of distillation of that. That would make sense, especially like you said, we're in Tokusatsu.
We see that Daitatsu might have a similar helmet now, which lets him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when I first saw Claude, isn't that the helmet that he was wearing before? And it was two very different things, but the fact that there's so many of them, it's obviously the notion of trying to recreate.
It'd also be nice as to explain, besides hiding secret identities and stuff, why the superheroes, there's so many masked ones, you know? I imagine that's going to have some sort of symbolism for the age as well and the time at which it takes place.
And a sports anime one as well. Because we did see a sports.
Yeah, there was a super sports guy there. So wait, you think the extreme angles you see, let's say in a soccer manga where it's like, whoa, this thing is so intense, it'll actually be like special effects coming off the soccer field.
Well, I was just thinking the ridiculous training that your man in Star of the Giants had to go through.
Okay.
With those metal harnesses and stuff. What if that gave him superpowers? But then again, that would just be One Punch Man. And but I definitely want to see the pre-World War II Super Beings, because, like I said,
that's the thing they could flash back to, yeah.
The Professor and Satomi are the guys I think we need the clearer
yeah.
motivation. And then we also need to get the idea of where, sort of, how does Daitatsu end up, assuming, presumably, with the Bureau? We're not entirely sure from that clip.
On their side, anyway.
Yeah. And sort of how the cop becomes so disillusioned and has to go on the run as well.
We haven't actually seen that yet. Yeah, you're right. There's a few things kind of left to cover. There's plenty of material to go from, and there's plenty of stuff left, plot stuff left.
Yeah, because we've seen that in like 72, 73, that he's got control of his arm. Because when he goes to fight the cop, he can just ignite it.
Yeah.
Without any worry.
He knows he has powers now as well. Yeah. It's not like he's doing it as a reaction, yeah.
But April is going to be bonkers. There's just so much good stuff coming in April.
We'll be spoiled.
We will. So now let's wrap up with something I've not watched and Niall's not watched. Anthony, you can come back.
I've been here all along, but I'm so confused.
Prince of Stride. A show I watched 2 minutes of and thought, that's not for me. I don't think the plot had even started at that point.
I'm not sure the colour's as saturated all the way through.
No, I don't think it was.
It's a flash, but
I think the flashback's very saturated. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I was like, that's instant turn off for me if you start your things like that.
Really? What was the colour palette of Concrete Revolutio?
Oh, yeah, but it's not oversaturated in Concrete Revolutio.
This is, it's exposed.
Yeah.
I always say. But yeah, I predicted this is the thing. This is going to be the show that people go crazy for, I think. I do believe that.
Because Pretty Boys.
Yeah, because Pretty Boys, it's sports. Sporty Pretty Boys. Right, so, God, I don't know how to carry on from 3 episodes of Revolutio. There's no fire and Godzilla and time travel. Anyway.
Okay, it's a girl watching WMV on her phone. There you go.
Oh, she watching it on her phone?
I thought that was her phone, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, that makes a lot more sense now because that ties into something later on. Yeah, she's watching apparently the best stride of all time, which is it's basically running and then you tag someone in and then they finish the race for you. Like, kind of like a relay kind of thing.
From watching this, what it is, it's like parkour, but as a relay?
Well, you don't have to do parkour. But if you want to win, you've got to do parkour.
Right.
Because they're not restricted to like a set track or anything like that. So far, it's been, there's the route. Kind of do whatever you like to get there.
Yeah.
And it so happens they do parkour. But these, it's first day of school. All these kids, they're looking for clubs to go to. And I'm trying to summarize this quickly. And anyway, there's this guy. He's really fast. He's jumped into all these different sports clubs, and he's really
fast,
good.
But not good at anything.
Well, no, he's pretty good.
Like, the dude who's playing basketball is like, see if you can get past me, newbie. And he gets, past him like, my God, so fast. But he left the ball after them.
Yeah, he's
he's not good at the sports, but he could be good because he's so fast.
He is physically fit as well. He's slender, whatever that crap is. whatever slender crap is. And he keeps saying, look, I'll join your club as long as I can join more than one, as long as I'm not restricted to more than one. Because at this point, you can kind of guess from the title he wants to run. I'm not going to sugarcoat
that. I thought he wants to do every sport by the look of him.
He wants to do everything.
He's the ultimate shonen sports guy. He wants to do all the sports.
But his brother, well, we'll get there. We'll get there. Because I've been not over reading into this. It's quite clear, some of it. But anyway, there's another guy with dark hair. He's like this moody guy. There's a girl called Sakurai, I think, and she wants to be part of this running club. She's asking him, where's the stride club at? Anyway, she finds it, and it's also joined on to the shogi club. And apparently the reason that is because each club in the school has to have a minimum of 3 members or else it's going to be closed down. And the shogi club shares its 3 members with the stride club, and they kind of keep each other a club. They say, all right, well, let's get our team together. Cause, they go along, they say they want to join. And the girl says, oh, well, I'll organize it. I'm going to find 2 runners. And the guy, the moody guy says, nope, you just need one. And then they go and find this guy from the start, whose name I cannot remember. The one who's fast. He's really fast. Anyway, they ask him to join. He seems keen-ish, but he's not truly convinced. So they say, right, you two have got to fight. Run against these old 2. And there's a big elaborate race around the school.
Which everyone was like, oh, you hear the strike club's doing a thing. Oh, I thought they disbanded. It's like, do you want to join? It's like, fuck no, let's go watch though. Everyone's well, super into watching.
They say, right, we're going to have a race. And like, it comes across on the, like, the announcement system of the school. There's people getting like mattresses to watch on the roof.
Everyone's super involved. Except
everyone's
for
super involved.
Part.
It's daytime. Then all of a sudden it's nighttime and there's like 12 people there. And I was like, oh, it's a bit of a letdown. No, but there does turn out to be more people. There's a huge elaborate race, you know, that they're running along stuff. And it's pretty exciting. It's pretty good. And the old team, the old two come neck and neck with these newbies. Like, exactly. Like, the time is exact. It's an outright tie. And, yeah. So they do reference that the old team who have now left school, they were the ones who did that perfect stride that the girl was watching on the phone, I think.
She can't find on YouTube now.
But she can't find because there's no signal in the school, or at least in that room. But the guy who's really fast surname is the same as one of those third years. So I'm assuming it's his brother.
Yeah.
Who was in that opening scene. And it's good. I quite liked it, you know. I thought it was all right. I've seen worse sports stuff. I've seen better sports stuff, but it's all right.
I found it weird though that everyone in the school was not into the running thing, except that they're in a sports anime about this running thing, so they're super into it when it's happening.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, it would be quite exciting to watch.
Well, say that, but you just see them like run past in a corridor and then they're freaking gone, and they have
the CGI
kind of laying out the roof that they're taking through the school, and I'm just like, are they watching the CG on their phone or something? What's happening?
Yeah.
I don't know how
they've all got
this
like
race.
Smart watch things where people can track their progress
Everyone's
on an
tablets.
iPad. That kind of thing. I think it's all right. I don't think it's. I get Brian's criticism, but it's literally he must have watched 2 minutes. He'd said 2 minutes, and it must have been 2 minutes for like this dreamlike scene with the girl watching the perfect stride as it's called, and he gave up. But I think it's good. And I think it's going to take off. I think it's going to be the thing. I'm calling it right now.
I'm trying to figure out which boy is which. Like, obviously, the dark-haired boy is the creepy dude who keeps touching up all the other boys.
Oh, yeah, he's grabbing, like, people's thighs and calf muscles to see if
they're
suitable.
See if they're good runners, yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's everyone's like, whoa, dude, back off. Everyone reacts like that. But it's like, yeah, they're all going to be their own little things. Your man's, like, the most shonen guy so far. I want to join all the sports.
But the characters in the club, although they're kind of cliched, they're interesting. They're cool enough.
I'm curious as to where it'll go, but
yeah, it was all right. I think you two should give it a go. I think you should give it a chance.
No.
Just you wait a little. It's bigger than Free. Just you wait.
Hey, I didn't watch Free either.
Perhaps not.
Okay. The question is, what are we going to watch next week? What are we going to watch?
I know, right?
Lupin.
What indeed.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, was I meant to, like, draw that out?
That's fine, yes.
All right.
Okay.
There are now 14 episodes of Lupin. Well, actually, weirdly, 13, but not... There's episodes 1 to 14, and episode 13 is coming soon, but the others are all up. Don't know what's up with that, Crunchyroll.
Should we do an episode of that for each week?
If we do two a week, that will bring us up. We'll have finished
it. Watch, like, half and the other half, yeah?
So watch episode 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
More Muko for a while.
Oh, no, we still do Muko.
We're up to date, really.
We're up to date with Muko. So the other thing I might watch next week is, because it's on the lineup now for Crunchyroll, is OG Sal and Marshmallow.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
That'll be all right.
So no Prince of Stride next week.
Well, you can watch Prince of Stride if you like.
I'll be watching it, but I don't want to be taught.
I'm going to take your Concrete Revolution stance.
All right, that's fine. I mean, if Dwayne won, I don't want to do it on my own. I'll watch it, but I'm not.
But it's a pain in the ass to watch because it's not streaming on the UK site yet.
Yeah, that's a bit of a balls.
It's not. But yeah, you're right. It's you can easy find it, but not as easily as if it was on.
You just fly to America and watch it. I believe that's.
I'll run. I'll stride to America and watch it. I'm the Prince of Stride.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure I end up watching some other junk as well, but those are the planned things, I think, for next week.
Okay. There's a bit of a...
Mr. Aisabatsu, of course, because that's still going as well.
Obviously. Yeah, obviously. I mean, we're not really lacking too much for stuff. I mean, when April hits, it's going to be bananas, but...
I might watch Detective Conan, because it's, I believe next week, it's the... They're doing this weird, like, 20-part celebration of the 20th anniversary of Detective Conan on as anime. But it's not like a 20-part TV series. It's like the first part is this story in the anime. And then the next part, some sort of event, I think. I can't remember. It's like all they're not necessarily all anime related, these parts. So I might check that out as well. So I'll let you know if it's good in our Facebook notes. And we'll see if we watched it. I think that's plenty to be going on with. Two episodes of Lupin, at the very least. And the Muko and Osamatsu. Yeah.
No more One Punch.
No more One Punch Man for 3 years, apart from the OAVs. That was my calculation. I did the maths. I think it would be 3 years before they
Why 3 years? Why?
Because I think that will...
Enough content.
There will be enough content at that point.
People will be very upset.
He's not busy redrawing the tattooed he has drew.
Yes.
I think I can wait 3 years for quality. Like that's fine.
Yeah, it's either that or they start doing bits of the web.
Bullshit,
manga
yeah.
that haven't been redone.
Well, it's okay. So, without JoJo, part four to see is true. And that part four is balls long.
Yeah, that'll be probably two seasons of that as well. So.
Yeah.
Easily.
There's plenty.
But that'd be fun.
Too much.
It'd be fun. I'm so forward to that because stands being used for purposes that if you or I had one, what would we do with it? Of course, zany get-rich-quick schemes.
And we'll have a Hiroyuki Imayashi show as well.
Yeah.
That's only 10-minute shorts.
Okay, well, said short now, I couldn't tell if it was like short length or was it like a short run. Some of the other things they mentioned there just said they only had like 3 or 4 episodes in them. So.
I think it's in the same slot as where Oji-san and Marshmallow is. That's only 3 minutes, so maybe even shorter than 10 minutes. So who knows? I don't care, as long as there's...
Yeah.
As long as it's good. What if it's Inferno Cop 2?
Actually, that'd be fine. I was thinking
that's fine, Ninja Slayer is just, I'm almost finished that, and I was like, I could use some more of this, and we just came around just in time.
Was Inferno Cop technically the first Trigger thing?
Yes, I'm going to say yes.
Well, it depends. They had other like YouTube things as well. Which one of those came out first?
Yeah, but they weren't all Trigger stuff on that channel. It was Trigger Company.
Probably.
Yeah, Inferno Cop was the thing. So to probably celebrate the fifth anniversary then.
Is it 5 years?
It can only be.
No, it's
5 years?
No, it's 5 years since they started.
Oh, right. Okay. I was going to say.
It'll be 4 years come Christmas Day that Inferno Cop started.
Oh, God, that feels like last week, but at the same time.
I'd forgotten that Inferno Cop started on Christmas Day as well.
What a gift.
The birth of our Lord and Savior.
Yes. Righty-ho, that wraps up this week's episode of Let's Go. Be back next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And in the meantime, check out our regular podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.blogspot.com and dynamitingthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bonsoir.
Bye.